Good afternoon. Welcome to I/O and welcome to our session on what's new in Android Developer Tools. My name is Xavier Ducroy. All right, so what's new?
I don't think we've done much.
Yeah.
Is my mic not working? Okay, it seems to be working.
There we go.
Yeah, so I think we have a few things to show.
Maybe. All right, so Android Studio. So when we released the first SDK in 2007, we released some tools with it. And since then, we've done a lot of progress in and outside of the IDE based on Eclipse. And we are going to keep doing that. But one thing that we could never really do is really improve the whole workflow of being an Android developer inside the IDE. And we really wanted to improve that. So when we decided to create our own, you know, Android-focused IDE, we decided to go with IntelliJ. IntelliJ is a great Java IDE, but it's also based on a very extensible platform. It's the same platform that powers some of the other IDE from JetBrains, like PyCharm, their Python IDE, or WebStorm, their JavaScript IDE. And this extensibility is really available throughout their stack. You know, some of the core components, like project support, build support, you know, the language support that powers all of their, you know, refactoring, all the way down up to the UI, where everything is customizable.
And this, and the build support, is that extensibility is maybe the most important part for given what we're going to show you.
Yeah. And so this is going to allow us to create, you know, a lot of very advanced feature that we couldn't really do super easily before, but also creates an experience that's really focused for Android. And when, you know, we encounter something in the IntelliJ, you know, platform that's not really extensible, we work directly with JetBrains to make sure that we had extension points so that we don't fork their platform, right? We're just basing our IDE on their platform. We're really using everything that they're doing. In fact, we're actually building on top of their existing Android support. So we, you know, it had support for building, editing, debugging, and we're just extending that. So in the past few months, we've mostly worked, you know, in our internal repository because we wanted that to be a surprise. And today we are moving back to the open source project. So it's live now in AOSP. And you know, since we are doing that, we figured out that we would also give you a preview. So today it went live not too long ago. You can go and download an early access preview of Android Studio. It's version 0.1. It's you know, going to be a bit rough around the edges. The IntelliJ part is, you know, mostly stable.
Yeah, there's some parts that are rock solid. There's other parts that are not.
Yes. But, you know, we want to have a lot of feedback. We want to make the best IDE possible. And, you know, we're going to iterate very quickly, you know, fix bugs, make it more stable, add new feature, and gather feedback from you. So please try it, you know, and send us feedback. Now, I realize that probably some of you, you know, have never tried IntelliJ before, and so we wanted to give you a quick overview of IntelliJ itself before we show you some of the Android Studio-specific features. And so I'm very happy to introduce on stage Dmitry Jemerov, the CTO of JetBrains, to give you an overview of IntelliJ.
So hello, everyone. Yeah, so my name is Dmitry. I'm the CTO of JetBrains. As they always say, I'm very excited to be here. And thanks for the warm reception during the keynote. And I'd like to tell a bit about our side of the story. So we have been long watching the work that the tools team has been doing on the Android tooling, and we have been very impressed with the quality of that work. So we are sure that our Android plugin is in good hands now. And from our side, yeah, we fully support that effort. We provide the necessary extensions in the platform that the guys here need from us. And so it all works together very nicely. From our side, we are also going to ship all of that stuff as part of our releases, as part of IntelliJ IDE itself. And for those of you who are not familiar with our products, we have actually two editions of the product. So IntelliJ IDE Community Edition is the free and open source version, which is actually what Android Studio is based on. And we also have IntelliJ IDEA Ultimate, the commercial edition of the IDE, which also includes support for server-side development, starting with CSS and JavaScript and proceeding to all the Java enterprise frameworks like Spring, Hibernate, Java EE, stuff like that, database support, and so on. So if you are working on a pure Android project, then the Android Studio is, of course, the best tool of choice for you. And if you have a project that has a server-side component, or simply if you're like working in a more like distributed environment, then you might want to look at IntelliJ IDEA Ultimate. So now I'm going to give a quick demo of some features in IntelliJ. It's not going to be Android specific, so that would be like Tor's part of the demo. I'll just start with a general overview. So the motto of our company is develop with pleasure. And one of the key things from which pleasure comes during development is not having to worry about routine tasks. So stuff happening, as much stuff as possible should happen automatically, should be done automatically for you. So for example, like routine stuff like saving files or managing imports, this is all done for you by the IDE automatically on the fly. Another part is that IntelliJ IDEA has a very wide array of refactorings and quick fixes for the problems that you can encounter in your code. And we do not see them just as tools for fixing errors or fixing code that is broken. We see them as an integral part of the code writing experience inside IntelliJ. And I'm going to show a little bit of how this works in practice. So I'm going to start writing a new method. So this is a simple Android app, a little more than hello world. And I have written a method called the method that does not exist. So now I'm going to use a quick fix to create it for me. Now I'm going to call the regular findViewID method, which all of you know. And now I'm going to use a refactoring to save this as into a variable. So I invoke the introduce variable refactoring, and I enter the name of the variable. And by the way, notice that it all happens in place. There are no model dialogs popping up, nothing like that. Now this actually has the wrong type, and it's actually text view. So I'm entering text view here. And notice that IntelliJ IDEA has automatically updated the imports for me. And it can also insert the necessary typecast for me. Now I'm going to write some like control structures, if at EO 2013. And now this if statement is incomplete. It lacks parentheses and stuff. And I'm going to use an action called complete statement that is going to turn this into a complete statement for me, essentially. So I'm invoking from the menu. Normally, of course, you always use the keyboard for this, but in order for you to see what I'm doing, the menu is more clear. So now this is an unresolved parameter, and I'm going to create this now, create parameter. And this actually triggers another refactoring, the change signature refactoring. And this is actually going to go through all of the calls of the method, of which there is only one, and it will actually introduce the necessary value into the call. Now, if we are actually at I/O, then set text, hello, I/O. Now, of course, this is an Android app, so this is supposed to be a resource, and we have a quick fix for that, but that's part of Tor's demo, not mine. And another thing worth showing is that in IntelliJ IDEA, we have actually two different code completion actions. So there's the regular code completion, which you have seen a number of times already, and we also have the smart type completion. And the smart type completion actually restricts the options that are shown in the completion list to the values of the correct type. And it's actually not something that you always want, but when you do want it, it's very, very easily accessible using a keyboard shortcut. And if you press the same keyboard shortcut again, it will actually look for chained methods called that return values of the same type. Now, actually, it looks like this parameter is always true, so I'm not really going to need this. So I'm going to use another nice coding assistance action called unwrap remove to get rid of the if statement from me. Now, I select the option to unwrap if, and poof, it disappears. Now this parameter is no longer used, and of course there's another quick fix to get rid of it, and remove parameter, it's gone. Yeah, by the way, I mentioned background code analysis, and I would like specifically to highlight some of the analysis features that we have. Some of them are pretty smart. So for example, this is my favorite inspection. So when you are writing UI code, you can very often make the error of mixing up the coordinates, so mixing up X and Y, or height and width, or something like that. And we have built an inspection specifically for that. So in this case, I'm having the max width value, and I'm passing it to the set mean height method. And IntelliJ IDEA highlights that I'm probably doing something wrong, and probably I have mixed things up, and I should correct them. The next thing I want to look at is our version control integration. An important thing to note that in IntelliJ IDEA, all the version control plugins, such as Git, Subversion, Mercurial, and a few more, they are all bundled in the distribution of the product, so you don't have to hunt for plugins. all the plugins have a consistent user experience and work in a similar way. And the key part of the version control integration is our changes view. This is the view that shows the list of all the files that you have modified or added to the project or removed from the version control, and it's automatically updated on the fly. And you can always access the diffs and see what changes exactly have you made. You can also use this view to trigger the commit action. So you just select the file that you want to go in, and you click on commit changes, and you get this commit dialog. And because this project is using Git, I also get the option to put the changes in. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I get the option of push the changes to the server immediately. Now, if you want to look at what other people in the project have been doing, you can use the Git log view for that. So if you switch to that tab, it shows a nice graph of all the commits. So this project does not have any complicated branch structure, but if it had, it would be displayed right here. And of course, I can also show diffs to see what exactly was changed. And I can use the update project action to pull the latest changes to my machine. Another nice thing that we have for Git is this branch chooser pop-up. So right now I'm on the MyDev branch, and I can very easily create a new branch for the new work that I'm going to start doing, or I can merge this into the master branch or something like that. Now, of course, I could be talking for hours about different features of the IDE, but we don't have that much time, so I'll switch to giving you some useful pointers on how you can explore the IDE further. So first of all, we have this tip of the day thing. And unlike some other products, it actually contains useful and relevant information, so you can just go look through those and learn something useful. Another useful thing is this Find Action keyboard shortcut. So if you are curious about, for example, some of the things that I have used for, you can just start typing complete, and it will show the complete current statement. Action show the keyboard shortcut for it, so that you can very easily invoke it that way and learn the keyboard shortcut in the future. We also have a blog where we post a lot of useful information on our product. You can follow us on Twitter. And finally, we have a booth in the developer sandbox, and we will be there for the whole 3 days of the conference. And if you have any questions on what's going on with IntelliJ or how is it better than Eclipse or stuff like that, please go there and ask us, and we'll be happy to answer those questions. Now I'm handing over to Zav for the
Thank you, Dmitry. We're really excited to build a studio on IntelliJ. It's really a fantastic tool. So now I want to talk a little bit about project support, because this is something that we really want to do well. If you look at the current situation, you're going to have, in Eclipse, we have some custom builders. We have an Enscript somewhere. IntelliJ has its own builder also, and they may not exactly all do the same thing, and it's really a problem, and we wanted to fix that. We want to have a single build system, a build system that's very flexible and customizable so that it can adapt to all your needs. And some of you have some very specific needs. And we want to make sure also that whether you're working in the IDE or whether you're building in your continuous integration server, then you should have exactly the same result, right? If you have some customization and you're working in your IDE and you don't get the same result because the IDE doesn't understand those customization, that's a problem. So for a little bit under a year now, we started working on that. We started designing and implementing a new build system. It's based on Gradle, and it's very extensive, customizable and very extensible, and it is deeply integrated into the IDE. That means that in Studio, the default behavior is when you create a new project, it's going to create a Gradle project using our Gradle plugin, and then it will get imported into Studio using the great Gradle support that JetBrains is adding into IntelliJ. And when you're building from Studio, it's going to actually delegate the build to Gradle and have Gradle do the build. So that whether you're inside your IDE or whether you're on the command line or build server, same result every time, and that's really important. We have a concept of a build variant in this build system. There was a talk during the keynote talking about beta test and alpha test and being able to deploy that to users. So we have the ability to have different build variants depending on whether you want to do a debug build, a release build, or maybe a beta build. We also have support for free versus debug, for instance. So here I have a build file that has two product flavors, so paid versus free, and then it has a new build type beta. And you could configure it, different ways. And so on the left here, I import that project into Gradle. I have a new panel here that says Build Ion that shows that I'm working right now on the paid debug version. That means that when I click launch, it's actually launching your paid debug version. If you actually look at the source folders on the left here, the blue source folder, so Java here, and then you know it's source main Java and source paid Java are your main source folders. So in that paid Java folder, you would put code specific to that version. The green version says here that's your test code, so instrumentation test and instrumentation test paid, that's your test specifically to test your paid version. And notice that there is a free Java and a instrument test free Java here that's not selected because you're not working on the free version. But the IDE knows about it, so here, based on everything that we say in the build script, the IDE is aware that you have six different variants, and when you switch to free debug, it's going to automatically switch those folders here. So the IDE is really aware of all your configuration. A lot of it is working now. There's some things, if you deal with variants and if you deal with resources in Flavor, we have some issue in the editor, but we're going to fix that. But the point here is that everything that you do in the build script to customize your application will be understood by the IDE, and that's very important. I'm not going to talk more about the build system. I have a session at 9 a.m. on Friday only about the build system, and I encourage you to attend it. And now Tor is going to talk to us.
All right. So I'm going to focus today on my monitor. Okay. I'm going to focus today on the areas where Android Studio is different than Eclipse, because there are many things that are the same, and so showing that wouldn't, we're not trying to prove that we're done, because we're not. There's many areas that are missing. So if I can bring up the screen, here you can see the environment, and one of the, I think, most noticeable features is that when you're editing layouts, you get this preview on the right. And we have a little bit of eye candy. We got Roman Neurix device frame art integrated, so you can sort of see the device here. So if I switch, for example, to, Galaxy Nexus, I can see that art, and, with drop shadows and everything. If you don't like that, if you really want your pixels back, which I can understand, you can go to the options and you can turn off the device frames, so you can sort of take all the space for the layout. But personally, I just sit there and look at the reflection overlay and love it. So obviously, as you're editing, you can kind of keep an eye on this. And note that as I'm moving the carrot around in the layout, you can see the corresponding views getting selected in the layout preview. Right, so you can see what you're doing. And likewise, I can actually click over here to navigate around in the XML. So it sort of makes it easy to navigate and know, what the different parts are. And just like in Eclipse, we have the configuration chooser up on top here. So you can go and, for example, you already saw me switch devices, and you can switch locales. This is what we showed in the keynote demo this morning. And there's also a theme chooser, which is now a dialogue, so you can more quickly search for things. So if I'm looking for dark action bar, for example, it'll find it right there, and then I can click on it to choose it, for example. One of the really nice things about this XML preview is that it's tied in with IntelliJ's XML model, which is really good at fault tolerance. So one of the nice things is if I, for example, go and I put a typo into this thing right here, into this switch, what you'll see happen is that, this widget disappeared because it's no longer valid, but the rest of the layout actually completed because it's not starting a fresh render each time. It's just sort of, hey, I have an error node in the DOM. And this also shows the error panel, which is showing up in the bottom right here. So I'm going to create a new layout. So to do that, I can invoke the new menu, new layout resource file, blank, five. So, and it's locale. I'm going to switch locale back to English. So when I'm entering text here, let's say I enter a button, you can see it's immediately telling me there's some problems here. So it's saying, hey, you need to insert a width and a height. Well, there's also links here. So I can, for example, just click on automatically add all missing attributes, and they kind of just appear. So there's a bunch of error recovery links right there. If there's a typo, for example, it'll figure out what you probably meant button, and it'll fix it. If you use fragments, in fact, let's do it. So I'm going to add a fragment, and we're going to need sizes again. So for fragments, it's saying, hey, you probably want to have a class associated with this fragment, right? And so I can invoke the chooser for that and pick one. Let's see, countdown fragment maybe. And now it's saying that maybe at design time you want to have a layout binding, because the whole point of fragments is that it's a Java class, and that class can decide based on the time of day and locale and whatever logic which layout to actually use. At design time, you can pick different ones at different times. So I'm going to just pick a random one, and now the layout is using that fragment. And you can see here in the layout this special tools attribute. This is where we store metadata. So you can safely ignore those. In fact, AAPT will also ignore them, so there's no runtime benefit, but this is how we can put stuff in the model. And we do the same thing in Eclipse for fragments. One more thing on the device art, we've also integrated this with the screenshot action. So in the Android window, I don't have a device connected, but if I did, you could basically click on the screenshot from your live device, get a screenshot, and then add whatever art you want. All right, so let's switch to the layout editor. So I'm going to switch over to this layout right here. This is a simple form. So now we're in the layout editor. And I'll just say right away, we are not feature complete here. So not everything that you had in Eclipse is ready here. But so I'm going to show you the few things where we are ahead, and that would be grid layout support. So the grid layout support in our Eclipse plugin, you know, is very incomplete, and it's much better here. As you can see, I can see the rows and columns here, and I can, for example, drag on these things to reorder them. If I want to pull in new widgets, here's the palette. You know, I get the predictable grid to choose where to put it and so forth, and I can put it between. So if you're doing grid layout editing, I would already use this, but there are some other areas where we're still working on it. The good news about this preview, by the way, is that they have a really good update mechanism. It's at least on some platforms, it just downloads a small patch file and restarts the IDE, so it takes 30 seconds. And we plan to use this to have this be a rolling preview. We talked about every week. We're publicly committing right now to consider our update interval. All right, so that's the layout editor. Let's see, the next thing I want to show you is code editing. So here's a feature we demoed this morning in the keynote, and that is the resource folding. So one of the really cool features in IntelliJ is that they have this folding feature where it collapses code. And so when you have a static inner class, you know, you have a run, so you have one line for the overadd annotation, another line for the public void run, a couple more lines for the opening and close breaks, they will fold it all into a single line. And so we've just used that feature and combined it with Android's resources to do what you see here. This is not the default color that we have for folding regions, but for the dark theme, the default one was a bit hard to spot for the keynote with the large screen, so we made it a little bit more blue. But in general, you can see here, in fact, let me click a key binding here to open all folds. So this is what the code really looks like, right? So you don't have to know the key binding I just hit, because by default, you open a file, it does one of these get string calls, we just show the string. And when you hover over it, you basically get to see the real code, like this. And take a look at this last one here. In fact, I'm going to jump into this resource. And you can see that what this is doing is it actually has formatting arguments, right? And when I go back and I look at the folded string, you can see that it's showing the actual parameters that we have in the code sort of in line with the string. So it makes it really easy to see what logically your code is doing. So now you may wonder, okay, so have you hard-coded this for get string? We have not. So if I look for, let's see, set text, for example, what we do is we use an annotation for this. So now I'm going to jump into the Android framework source code. Hopefully there's nothing proprietary here. If you look, this is the text view class. And there's a new annotation on here. And this is a bit TBD. We haven't actually integrated this, but I think there's some consensus that this is what we're going to do. There's a resource int annotation. And it's saying that, hey, this integer parameter right here, we expect that to be a resource int. And so that's the actual thing that the code folding is using. It's seeing, is this a method? So when you call setText, even if you don't call getString, even if you just pass r.string.foo, it'll actually do this resolution. So since we're talking about annotations, let me show you a few others that we're adding. If I go to context, you can see not null, right? So we're also adding nullability annotations. And IntelliJ can actually show those. So if I open up the project configuration for my SDK, there's this annotations setting where we have basically bundled Android annotations. So it can basically read annotations from an external file, not part of the SDK, and that's how we can actually take these annotations and associate them with older SDKs, and it's using this on the fly. So if I now jump down to the bottom of the file here, let's see, here, for example, This line is highlighted because it knows that getCurrentFocus, which is an inherited method from the framework, can return null, and therefore this line could potentially return or cause a null pointer exception. If I jump into the other annotation here, service name, I'm going to jump to source for that. And this is making a local annotation saying that service name has to be one of these identifiers. So in fact, if I go back to my Android Studio, you can see we have another annotation here saying that you're passing in write to set layout direction, but it's the wrong write. Even though these are both ints and the compiler is happy to do it for you, we know it's wrong. And that's because, again, we have this information now in this external file that basically records what constants are allowed for integer parameters and, in the case of the system service here, strings. And we use this not just for semantic analysis. If I, for example, go into get system service and press control space for completion, you can see it knows the strings there too. So you don't have to, especially for integer APIs, it's kind of nice. You don't have to know exactly what the strings are. At this point, I'm going to jump and show you a few other IntelliJ editor features. So when I was showing you the resources earlier here, we have references to notification icons, and those are being previewed on the left. This is the actual size we show them in. I think we maxed them out at like 14 pixels. In the keynote demo, they were a bit bigger to make them visible, but this is what they'll get scaled down to. So these graphics can be big. These aren't just for icons. If you have, you know, a 128 by 128 icon, it'll also just be shoved into this editor margin. And colors are previewed as well. And if you open up the show documentation view, I think it's F1. If not, we have an expert on stage. F1, yes. This is the documentation for this resource. You can see we show you all the translations right there in the pop-up. And if I do it on a icon, I can see all the icon versions. And I think there's also, yes, it's computing what the actual pixel sizes are at the different densities. All right. So we've also integrated lint. There was already a lint integration in IntelliJ, but it now does more of the inspections. And lint actually does analysis both on XML, Java, and class files. And the last part is tricky because one of the things you'll discover in Android Studio is that it doesn't do background compilation in the same way you're used to. There's an explicit run compile action. So because of that, lint doesn't have the class files to look at. So what we've done is we've re-implemented the most important one, API check, using IntelliJ's own AST APIs. And so if I look for API check, here's an example of this. So if I hover over this, it's telling me that this API requires 14 and your current min SDK is 7, and that is a potential runtime problem. So what you can do is you can use an annotation to basically say, you know, this method will only be called when we've already validated that the platform is at least 14. The way people typically do that is what you see on the next line. You actually have an SDK check. And since it was very tricky to do this with sort of flow analysis in a class file, but it's pretty easy with AST. So this is something we haven't done in Eclipse or on the command line lint yet. But in IntelliJ, it knows not to flag these two lines because they are inside this version check right there. We also have a couple of new lint checks. And is there a talk on the right-to-left text stuff here at I.O.? I'm not sure, but if not, at least we have a couple of new lint checks related to right-to-left, and they are disabled by default because they're a bit experimental. But if you're trying to target API 17 and you're doing right-to-left text, you should check out the lint options. So in the search box, you can just search for lint. You'll find all the inspections, and you can see the ones that don't have a checkbox next to them are off by default, and you may want to turn them on. In fact, for the basic Java code analysis in IntelliJ, there are some that are off by default that we've gone and bumped up. So on our team for the tools, for example, we make override annotations mandatory. You can't actually override without setting the override annotation. All right. At this point, I want to show you a couple of cool IntelliJ features that Dimitri didn't get into. So the first one is scopes. So here I have a library project, and I can go ahead and create, and I'm using Action Bar Sherlock because I'm trying to have an action bar in an older version of Android. So I can go ahead and open up the scopes feature, and I can go ahead and make a new scope, a new local scope, and I'm going to call it Action Bar.
And then I can say that I want this to basically match all of action bar. I just closed the dialog. Sorry about that. And now I can basically say that I want to add everything from, I don't know, I'm making a mistake here, project. Okay, I'm going to choose everything in the action bar Sherlock, and I'm going to include recursively. So now I have a new scope. Now I can go to file colors, and I can basically add a new color scope for my new scope. So I'm going to make everything related to action bar orange. And now if you look in the Project Explorer, everything here is orange. And if I open these files, you can see the tabs are orange. And in fact, in the recent file dialog, things are orange. So this is really good if you have projects that you are trying to use and they're in your workspace, but you don't want to accidentally edit them. You know, you're jumping into a resource and you find, ah, this is actually in the library. I can't change this. This feature is really useful for that. My favorite feature in IntelliJ is OpenSymbol. So if you are exploring a new API, if you're not particularly familiar with something in an API, OpenSymbol lets you jump to a method name or field name. So if you're not sure which class to look in, instead of searching with Google, which you should do, you can use OpenSymbol here. So I'm going to use the go to action feature that Dmitry showed you. If you don't know any key binding, basically you can open this dialog and then you can search for it and it'll basically match OpenSymbol. Okay. So this is the OpenSymbol action. And now let's say I want to find out the parent activity name or something like that. So I can type parent activity name. And actually, I want to go to this one. So navutils contains a method called getParentActivityName where I pass in the context. That would have been very tricky to find if I had to know to start with navutils, for example. Another cool feature is injecting languages. So here I'm showing a method called inject. And so if you look carefully, you can see there's a green shine to this area. That's telling me that it knows there's a sort of a different language inside this string. And if I open up the quick fix dialog, it says, ah, this is a regular expression. And I can, for example, open a regular expression tester, and I can type in text to see if it matches. And so on the next line, you can see I'm going to go on the third line here. Person, this looks like XML, right? I can say inject language, and I can pick the language that I know this is. I'm going to say this is XML. And now, this is going to be treated as XML. So, in fact, let me make a mistake in the XML. So now it's saying, hey, this looks invalid to me. It's saying there's no attribute value here, right? So it's basically validating my string escaped as XML. And I believe this is really useful when you're, for example, doing database queries. I think IntelliJ has a database plugin. So if I were to treat this as SQL, for example, you could get additional language help that way. And I'm almost out of time. The last tip I'll give you is that in a lot of dialogues in the IDE, you can just start typing. It's not going to tell you can do this. It's just something you know. So my favorite key binding, other than Alt-Enter, is Control-T. Control-T is basically the action to refactor this. So if you can't remember, the key binding for, renaming or moving or whatever, just know Control-T, refactor this. And so here's this dialog. Notice that there's numbers at the beginning of these items. I can just hit the number on my keyboard to invoke that action. But more importantly, I can just start typing. So if I type, change. Actually, that was a bad word. Okay. Constant. If I start typing CON, you can see it matches. So it's a very quick way to navigate. And this works in lots of places. So for example, if I go back to my, if I want to go create a new resource folder, here, add new resource directory. If I, for example, want to go and add a language to my animation folder, let's change that to layout instead, because I like layouts. Oh, that's the name. Layouts. If I add in a new language, you can see we have region art here. So if I just start typing Norway, you can see it's now matching from the whole list of hundreds of regions down to the region that I'm trying to add here. And then I can add my resource folder like that. All right, I'm out of time, but there's there's some more stuff. So, you know, keep looking at our blogs and posts for additional tips. Right. Thanks.
Thank you, Tor. So one other thing that we wanted to do in this IDE is to cover more than just like regular Android applications. I mean, in the context of Android application, a lot of your users are going to have more than one device. They'll have a phone and a tablet. And if they install your application on their device, they're going to expect those two installations to actually be synced together. And so we wanted to add, you know, really support to help you build applications that are connected like that. And so I'd like to invite on stage Brad Abrams, the PM for App Engine, to tell you about this feature.
Awesome. Thank you. So the best Android apps are powered by the cloud. And customers tell us that Google's cloud platform is really ideal for mobile backends. And that's why we were very happy to invest in the Android Studio project. So what I thought we'd do is actually cloud connect the stopwatch application that you saw earlier. So what we're going to do in just a couple of minutes is build out a completely synchronized stopwatch application. So somebody at the front of the race can have the stopwatch. Someone at the end of the race can see exactly the start and stop time of that. So in order to do that, one stopwatch will click start. That'll send a REST request up to our server running an App Engine. That will then send a message to GCM. Beeping is going on. GCM will send Tickle down to another Android application, and then that will do a REST request back up to App Engine and get the actual state. So let's flip over to the demo and see that, which is here. So what I have is the Android Studio, and I have the exact project that we've been using, the stopwatch app. And I thought I'd start exactly where Tor left off in the keynote today. Tor did a great job in the keynote, didn't he? This is pretty good. So let's start right where he left off. We'll come in and say generate backend. So what this is going to do is... those values you can fill in later. What this is going to do is generate for us a project, a server project that you can easily go deploy to App Engine that already knows about this client-side code. So if we look in this server project, there's a few pieces of code here. And you see we have a couple of endpoints. We have a device endpoint and a messaging endpoint. The device endpoint encapsulates all the plumbing needed to do GCM, Google Cloud Messaging. So how many of you have actually done GCM before? Good. And then it was probably some drudgery in getting that to work, especially on the server. And so we've taken care of all of that for you, and that's encapsulated in there. But what we want to do now is add our own custom endpoint that's going to be exposed as a REST interface. So in order to do that, I'm just going to copy in a stopwatch state class, and this is a POJO. This is a plain old Java object. I've marked it up a little bit, but all it's storing really is three bits of information: the device ID, the timestamp, and then whether or not we're running or not. So we've got this, and you can see it's just got basic accessors on it. Now what we want to do is take this, and we want to generate a REST interface based on that POJO. And so what we're going to do is just generate a cloud endpoint for that. And if we flip over into this endpoint, you can see we've already got the code for listing all of the entities for doing, and that includes paging, by the way, in case you have a lot of these. You can get the stopwatch state, you can insert the stopwatch state and whatnot. So all that's already done for you. It stores the data in App Engine's NoSQL data store. But now what we want to do is go and add a little bit more logic into here. So I'm just going to grab import. And I'm going to do some of the GCM code. So what we want to do is when there's an insert, so we'll come down here to insert. Right now when we're inserting, we're just storing the data in data store. But what we need to do in addition to that is send a tickle out over GCM. And so we have some utility code for doing that. that I'll put in here, and we'll post this code later so you can take a look at it. And then we just need to add a little bit of code to actually do the send. So right after we persist it, what we're going to do is enumerate through all the devices that have registered. Now, we may have 100 people with a stopwatch application wanting to be updated in real time. So we enumerate through all those. We just check to see if the one we've gotten to is the same one that sent the request, so we don't want to reset ourselves. So we exclude that one, and then we just send that tickle. And then to make this compile, I need to throws IO exception. And that it's nice to decorate that, because actually we're going to propagate even exceptions and errors all the way down to the Android app, as you'll see in a little bit. So we've basically got the server side of our application done. And you can see it's done in the same IDE, in the same language, very easy, seamless to move between that. Now what we can do is come in and upload this application to App Engine. Go ahead and deploy it directly from the IDE. In the interest of time, I have already deployed that for us a little bit this morning. So let me bring that up. What you'll get by default with this project is a simple test page. It shows you all the devices that have registered. In this case, nobody has registered yet. And then it'll let me send a message. But to explore those endpoints, if you go to underscore AH API Explorer, you can actually explore all the interfaces that we've just defined. So you can see there's the REST interface for C2DM, and then here's the stopwatch one we just added. And I can come and interact with this. I can test authentication. You see the REST responses and whatnot that I get out of here. So this is a nice way to make sure that your server-side logic is working exactly the way that you expect before you start moving to the client. Okay, so back in the client, what we need to do now, we have our REST interface, but we need to be able to call it from the client. So in order to do that, I'm going to come back in here, and I'm going to generate a client library. And what this is going to do is take the same discovery document that powers that API Explorer and use that to generate strongly typed Java code that's Android-optimized, mobile-aware code, and stick that in our client project for us. So it'll make it very seamless for us to access this server code. So now you see it created this new folder. We're back in the client side of the app. It created this new folder with these three endpoints on it. Now let's take a look at how we go and call that. So I've just made a few modifications to the code to be able to call the endpoint we defined. And we'll go ahead and overwrite those. And the main thing that we just did, we added some helper class, but the main thing we did is make sure all the network operations happen on a background thread. So either by spinning up a thread, or in our case, we're using an async worker. So that ensures that as I'm doing that network traffic, the UI is not hanging and freezing and whatnot. So that's that basic code. Now the last bit is I just need to come in and wire it up. So when I hit start and stop, the actual methods get called. So I've already got handy dandy added to my method, this send state with endpoint. And you can see it's grabbing the current time. So I'm actually going to take the current time. I'm going to send whether or not this is a running, and then my ID. And this is going to send it up. And notice I call that in this method, start, stop. So whenever I hit start or stop, I do a REST request up to the server. So I think we've got it basically working. You guys want to see this thing running live? Okay, so let's go. I think I hit this. Okay, so I've got two phones here. Whoop, that one can't go yet. Okay, so the first thing I want to show you. Are we seeing it? Yeah, the first thing I want to show you is when I launch this app, by default, the project that comes with Android Studio, it'll give you this registration screen. This is your indication that the GCM registration was successful. You're able to contact your App Engine back in, and it was able to register this device ID with GCM. Obviously, when you go to deploy this app, you can remove this screen. So we've registered. Hopefully, they're both up. Let's reset and start this one. Okay, notice when I started this one, the other one started. And when I pause this one, that one pauses at exactly the same time. Pretty cool, huh? So let me just switch back here. And one more slide to leave you with. We're very excited on the cloud team to support Android Studio. As Zav mentioned, we've done the work to make sure you can do builds of even the server-side stuff outside of Android Studio, so you can do it in your build tool of choice. And you can find more information about the cloud at that URL. And then I'm giving a little bit longer version of the talk later at this place. So love to see you there. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. So, you know, it's an Android IDE. We're going to add a lot more features, including features like, you know, the cloud stuff. Oh, that's not where I wanted to go. So we're still supporting Eclipse, and I want to show you a feature that's new in Eclipse but that we'll bring to the IDE. During the keynote, you saw that we had a translation on the Play console, and I want to show you that now. So here, so this is my account, you know, and I have an app. It's called Sample App, and I can create a new translation. So I already have some French translation that are ready to go, but I'm going to create a new version. I'll call that test. My original translation is in English. Continue. All right, and here I can use the plugin. If you have a complex project, you're going to have a lot of, you know, strings, and you probably don't want to go and get them and upload them manually. So directly in the plugin, you can say use plugin, and then you're told what to do, which is useful. And then you go to Eclipse, where we have this new plugin. It's not part of the bundle, the bundle that we have with IDT and Eclipse, but it's available. You know, if you go to developer.android.com, you'll have the instruction right next to the IDT instruction to install it. And from here, you can very easily, I think from here, Translation Manager, you can just do request translation. So I already, you know, logged in with my same account, and it discovered that I had my, you know, test project that is waiting in my browser. And so I can just click Next, and then it knows all the strings that I have. So you can go and look and make sure that those are the strings that you want. And then you just upload them. In that case here, just a single string, but if you had a lot of string file, you know, it would just upload all of them, which is really convenient. And then you finish, you go back into the console here, you click continue, and then you say, well, I want to translate them, I don't know, in German, for instance. You click OK, and then you choose your translation, and then you choose some translator, and then you click confirm, and then you get, you know, a week later your translation. And then, of course, we want the same thing, right? Because you know, the file that you get back from the translator may not be exactly, you know, the format that we want. So here we just go and easily click download. And here, you know, I have some translation here that are ready. And so I click next. There they are. I click download. And on the left here, under values, I have my, you know, you show here which string you just got. And you got your string translated directly. So the whole workflow is directly integrated into the IDE. We'll have support for Studio, of course, but it's available now. I think you have to go and sign up for the pilot to be able to do that. All right. And this is, you know, the end. We have a couple of... So we are taking questions. You know, if you want, so feedback again, you know, b.android.com to file bugs. We have a mailing list, edtdev at Google Groups. And then, you know, we can, we love feedback on Android Studio. All right. I guess there's no question.
The translation is a nice feature. A question is, what if you translate it once and then you added a couple strings or changed a couple? Does it know to just ask for translating what changed?
I think it deals with that. There is actually a talk on Friday at 12 p.m. that will talk a lot more about that. And you should go and check it out. They'll probably have the answer. But I think they noticed the file that have already been translated, and they only translate the new things.
I'm looking forward to your weekly updates. Thanks for committing to that. I wanted to get a little clarification on the direction between Eclipse and the studio, and kind of validate where we're going with the two IDEs.
We're supporting.
I suspected that question would.
Yes. We are going to keep supporting Eclipse. You know, that's something that we won't be able to do in Eclipse because it has, you know, the language framework is not as good or as extensible, so it's harder for us to plug into it. But we're going to keep supporting Eclipse. Right now, we're focusing a lot on Studio because we have to bring a lot of the features from ADT into Studio. But we're going to keep supporting both. At some point, we're going to integrate Gradle directly inside ADT also so that you have a single build and have both IDE be able to build with that.
One of the things that I, first of all, thank you for using IntelliJ. It's a great IDE.
Yes.
One of the things that I miss from Eclipse is Merge Manifest. Do you know when that's going to be available for
so,
library projects?
It's a key feature of the new build system.
Yes, the new build system merged the manifest, so you don't have to do anything. So we still support the old builder in IntelliJ. In case you have an older IntelliJ project that you are using, so you can open it and use it. But the default behavior is to use the new build system, and the new build system deals with merging the manifest.
Okay. Is that available now? I mean, I already
yes.
use IntelliJ.
Yes,
so
it is available now. Yeah.
Okay, so just on developer.
Yeah, if you get Studio, you know, you'll have automatically create a new project, and you'll see the new build system, and it does manifest merging.
Yeah, in the new in Android Studio, you can't create, in the Android Studio version, not with the Android plugin in IntelliJ, you can't create old style. You can only create basically Gradle-based projects because we're really trying to get that part working beautifully.
Hi, translation question. Yep. My apps are all translated by volunteer users. I'd love to see crowdsourcing in your framework. Any thoughts on that?
Again, session at 12 on Friday. Okay. The people who deal with that will give you a bigger demo and they can answer that question.
Thanks for the switch to IntelliJ.
Last question.
Yeah, yes. That's really appreciated. I'll have to get used to Gradle, I guess, because I'm using Maven to do all the builds. I've got a question about compiling with multiple APK libs. So you mentioned ActionBar Sherlock before. That's commonly used, and it's not uncommon to use it with Hollow Everywhere and Hollow Everywhere Preference, maybe with your own APK lib as well. So in some of my projects, I'm building with four APK libs all at once. At the moment, that takes a long time because you've got to run, you know, ADT through all of them. So, and what's, you know, where are you progressing on that?
So, we have better support for that. I think it's a lot dependent on dex merging to be able to help with that. But we have a new feature to merge resources that's more incremental, so that will be faster. In general, we're improving that a lot. It may not be just there yet, but we're improving that a lot. Also, one thing is that because of Gradle, you won't necessarily need to have all those projects open in Eclipse before you had to have them open. So here you can just focus on one module, and that makes things faster anyway. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.